K-Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome, listeners, to Mindful Mud. I'm Flavina Nickley, your host. I'm a Zen teacher and mindfulness instructor. This show is about mindfulness and the many ways, really, it can be implemented into our lives. Today, we're actually having a very interesting program. I'm sitting here with a fifth grader, Lily. She's going to introduce herself here in a little bit. And we'll talk about the Mindful Schools program that I've been guiding for over 10 years at the Redway School and now also Miranda Junior High and other schools around the Southern Humboldt area. And we were definitely especially kind of focused on what we've been doing on at the Redway School level. Depending how the show goes, I will talk a little bit about research as well. Why do I even think mindfulness in schools is great? And what does research show us about it? So how about Lily? How about you introduce yourself? Just your name, your grade.
Okay, my name is Lily. I am in fifth grade, and Miss Florina teaches at my school.
Yeah, thanks, Lily. That's great. She's the brave one who showed up today. So just to give you all a little bit of background of what we have been doing at especially Redway School. Again, I started teaching there over 10, it's probably 11 years now, at Redway School. And I started when actually my child, Julian, who's our engineer today, started kindergarten there. And I realized coming from Switzerland, you know, our school system is way different over there. And coming from Switzerland, I realized, you know, how under-resourced really our school system is, just simply from money and just many, many things are lacking. And I wanted to get involved and help out and do something and contribute. So as a friend of mine told me about Mindful Schools and as a, you know, meditation teacher, I thought that's a good way I could contribute. So I took a lot of education through mindfulschools.org, the organization in the Bay Area. I took two full-year educational programs. The last one I took 2 years ago. So I've done a lot of work with them. And, you know, so I started Redway School again, you know, a long time ago. And it's been fun. It's been going back every year. You know, sometimes I have pretty much the whole school I'm teaching. Sometimes it's less classrooms. We've even kept it going during the pandemic. And so it's been fun. The great thing is because I do every year there, kids start to know me. Kids know about mindfulness. And so I don't have to start with zero. So we can just build from the last year's lesson. So how it looks like, just to give you a framework here, what I do is I used to go in for 16 lessons a year, and these lessons are basically about 20 minutes long per classroom, and pre-K all the way to sixth grade. Then, you know, I adjust the lessons, obviously, according to the kids and the age. So that's kind of what the school program is behind, you know, as a framework. And now I'm not doing 16 lessons because I've been continuously every year going back. So I'm doing 8 lessons because kids already know mindfulness. And we can just build on the previous school year. Okay. So that's kind of like, that's it from my part on that way. So now, Lily, I'm super curious to hear, like, because, you know, I love mindfulness, obviously, right? And I've been practicing it for 30 years. But I'm really curious, what are you getting out of it? Like, what do you even remember about mindfulness?
I remember that it's just, like, something you, if you're, like, upset or angry, you can use it to just calm down, realize where you are, and just, like, take it in. That's kind of how I see it from my perspective.
I love when you say you notice where you are and you can just take it in as it is, right? That's basically almost kind of like the description of mindfulness is you're here and you notice how things are. And you're not trying to resist so much, right? You just notice, oh, okay, now I'm angry, now I'm sad, or now this is going on. And by noticing that, so that's helpful for you when you can notice where you're at in a moment.
Yeah, it's really helpful because you can just notice where you are and, like, you're here. You're not, like, tomorrow or yesterday. You're here right now.
That's true, right? Yeah. Sometimes I say, where are we? It's about being here and now, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. And often we forget that because our mind goes all over the place. Yeah. So how would you, like, if somebody has no idea about mindfulness, how would you describe mindfulness?
I describe mindfulness as, like, something that you can use, like, it's like a way to calm down, like, it's kind of hard to explain. But, like,
it's hard to explain.
Yeah,
it's true.
Like,
I can help you out. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, go ahead.
Like, something that's, like, to take it in, just, like, take in everything. Everything. Just calm. Notice where you are, what you're doing. Notice your body.
Yeah, okay, body, right? Yeah, body is one of the big lessons. So it's true. Mindfulness is about noticing what's happening right now, right? Noticing what's happening right now. Paying attention to what's happening right now. And then also, do you remember we're doing this with kindness and curiosity, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of curiosity in there. It's like, oh, so how does it really feel right now, right? So for instance, right now, how does it feel to be on the radio, Lily?
It's a little scary, but it's fine because I'm just, like, talking in the conversation. I can't even see anyone who's watching this.
That's true. We can't hear our listeners, right? So it makes it a little easier. Yeah, I sometimes feel the same way. I'm like, even be on a TV would be harder, right? And people can't really see the faces we're making in here either, which is kind of fun.
Like, we could be making the craziest faces while saying that and they wouldn't even notice.
That's true. They have no idea, right? Now I bet you the listeners are probably starting to wonder, what faces are they making in there? Perhaps we should have video recorded in, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, back to mindfulness. It's true. It's about noticing what's happening right now. And it sounds so easy, but it's not, again, right? Because the mind takes us away. When you think back at the lessons, what's your favorite lesson? Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, my favorite lesson was probably, like, the emotions one, where you're trying to, like, don't let your emotions, like, get the hold of you. That's probably my favorite one.
Oh, and I'm, you know, the listeners are not seeing what you just did, but you showed basically the brain model already, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the little flip the lid. Yeah, totally. Let's just talk about this because that's really, it's actually one of my favorite things too, and it helps me in my daily life a lot. Yeah, the flip the lid one. So let's see. Can you describe what that means when you think about a listener out there who can't see what you're doing with your fist?
Well, what I'm doing with my hand, it's like, so kind of, it's if you're opening your hand and...
So first we make a fist, right?
Yeah.
And the fist is basically like our brain. Our brain is a little bigger than the fist, but we can still say that's the brain model. And this brain model, by the way, if you're curious, listeners... this comes from Dan Siegel, and it's a very wonderful way to explain how this stuff actually really, really works. Okay, go ahead. Take it away.
So it's like you have to keep your emotions in check. When you're like, say you stub your toe, you're going to get like mad, and you're probably going to say things that you regret saying. But you got to keep it in check and just take a deep breath, just calm down and not get too like angry or let your emotions take control of you.
Yeah, that's a really wise right thing to say, right? And mindfulness exactly can help us with that for sure. So let's go back to that brain model. So we talked about mindfulness and emotions, and how I like to explain it is when you have that fist, when you make a fist out there, and you look at that fist and you think of it as a brain, and when you open that fist, what can you see?
You can see just like the little thumb in there, which is the thumb is like your brain, your like emotions and all that in there. And then your the top of your hand is like what's keeping it in, but when you make it up, it's just out there.
Right. So, yes. So when we open that fist, right, we see the little thumb. And the little thumb is kind of the middle of our brain. And we can call this the emotional brain, as you said, right? And the emotional brain is not – it's really good at keeping us safe sometimes. If there is a real danger, let's say a car is almost running us over, we need to act really fast and very furious, right? So it's really good at keeping us safe in the moment. But when you let's – I love that example of stabbing a toe, right? So that's not really super dangerous. Plus the hurt already happened, right?
Yeah.
So then it's not really helpful if we totally freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. So but what happens when we totally freak out – that bigger part that wraps around when you think about the fist, all the fingers that wrap around with the fist around that thumb, that's the higher functioning brain, right? And do you remember this part where the nails are?
Yeah.
That's the very intelligent part, right? That's the prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's only the human brain, correct? Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and that is the one that can tell us, oh, I stubbed my toe. My goodness, that hurts, right? And that can also, what you just said, oh, I don't have to freak completely out, right? So it kind of is like, oh, what am I going to do now? I'm going to put some salve on it to make it feel better. That's all that front part of the brain who is able to take care of the little hurt that we get, right? But what happens is when we, you know, stab a toe or when something happens in a moment, we flip the lid, which means when you, listener out there, have that fist going on, if you open that up and have the finger detached from the little center brain, then the center brain, the emotional brain, is running the show, right? And then, as you said, you say things and do things you regret later. Yeah, it's a great example. Thanks, Lily, for bringing that up. Yeah, that's a way to explain, like, what happens actually in our nervous system, in our brain, right, when things happen. So do you feel like that's helpful when you understand a little bit what's actually happening in my body when things are hard?
Yeah, it's helpful to know that your brain, like, you know what's happening, so you know, like, what is going on in your brain.
Right, because often I feel it's so helpful. That's why I really like neuroscience, because sometimes otherwise I just feel like I'm not doing things right, or, you know, it's all my fault if I overreact and something. But if I actually know, oh, that's where this is coming from, right? If my body just wants to keep me safe, then I have an easier way to deal with that. Yeah, and I also then we know, okay, how can we attach this upper part again to the emotional part? Do you remember that?
Just like think for a minute, just take a deep breath and just think about what just happened. You're not in danger. You're not in trouble and stuff.
Right. Yeah, the thinking comes after, remember, because the thinking is already in that higher upper brain. So that what you said, the other thing you said, the taking the breath, right? Taking a moment. That's the key when we start to freak out, right? That's the key. So we can actually, anytime we can pause when it's a difficult situation. It can be emotions, can be something else. Anytime we can take a breath and pause, that helps us to get that brain, we can say integrated, right? The different brain parts are starting to talk with each other. And then from there, we have really good ideas what to do. And we also know what not to do or what to say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you, sometimes I think I've seen this before when somebody actually, you know, hurts the foot. Like, let's say you stub a toe, as you said. And then instead of, like, taking care of the toe, they just bang it again into the wall because they're so mad, you know. So you hurt yourself twice. Yeah. Okay. That's a really good example. So we can deal with emotions differently when we're mindful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see, what other lessons do you remember?
I remember mindful eating.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember a lot of them, actually.
Okay, well, let's talk about mindful eating if you would like to.
Yeah. Mindful eating is like thinking about where it came from, being thankful that you got the food, the food. Think about where the food came from. Maybe thank the people that made the food.
Wow, that's a big level of mindful eating, right? Just acknowledging, wow. Yeah, it's not just ended up on my plate for no reason, right? There's a lot of people, sometimes animal involved. That's true. What else do you remember from mindful eating?
I remember like the... Oh, wait. I just forgot what I was going
to say. That's okay. You know, like it's the same thing. Like with mindfulness, we slow everything down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we do mindful eating, so we did this very slowly, right? So first we notice, oh, do you want to share with the listeners what we did this year? What did you eat?
We ate gummy bears.
That's the first year that I brought gummy bears to the schools. That's right.
Last time it was raisins.
That's right. Yeah. So, okay, Lily, just before we go into mindful eating, do you want to share where you had mindfulness with me before? Do you remember?
Skyfish, right?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because that's your first year at Redway School, right?
Yeah, it's my first year at Redway.
So that's true. I've taught at Skyfish before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably kindergarten, first grade, something like that.
Yeah, I barely remember it, but I was like, oh, wait, you taught me at Skyfish too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, and so you remember from Skyfish that I brought raisins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You brought raisins.
Uh-huh. That's normally the thing I do. And now I switched it up. You can, by the way, thank the engineer that I brought gummy bears because Julian told me to.
Congratulations. Thank you. No more raisins.
No more raisins. I love raisins, but gummy bears are fun, huh?
They're tasty.
So the thing is this, you can eat anything mindfully, right?
Yeah.
And it's funner to do with something you like, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever, like, have you ever practiced that at home?
Yeah, a few times, actually. Like, my grandma actually came, and when she made the food... My brother actually said he did this, and he liked the food. He admired the food. He thought about where it came from. He thanked grandma a lot.
Because it was so yummy?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's something about grandma's foods, right?
Yeah,
they're always
cookies.
Better. Yes, it's true. Cookies, huh? Yeah, so with mindful eating, we're eating it really slowly. We notice, as you said, who made it, right?
Yeah.
The ingredients, where do they come from?
Yeah.
All the people involved. And then also, how does it smell
mm-hmm.
before we even eat it, right? So mindful eating starts way before we put the bite in the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does it look like? How's the texture in the hand, right? If we have it in the hand. Yeah, all of that. And then when you chew it, right, all that knowing. So if you're out there eating something right now, really slow down, right?
Yeah, think about what you're eating.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps somebody right now is at lunch, right, listening to us.
Yeah, maybe thank the person who made the food for you.
Perhaps it's themselves. We can thank ourselves.
Thank yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself a pat on the back.
There you go.
You made the food. You did it.
You did it, yeah. You're nourishing yourself. It's true. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing to do. And it can make us really happy, right? Sometimes we eat so unconscious, right? Have you ever eaten something like while watching TV or something?
Yeah, and you just don't really think about what you're eating. Mm-hmm. You just eat it and you don't really think about it.
Right. And it's kind of normal to do that. At the same time, it's also fun not to like to really slow down.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have talked about emotions, right? Mindfulness can help with emotions. We've talked a little bit about mindful eating, how that can be so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are other lessons that you enjoy?
Like mindful looking. I enjoyed that one too. Like looking around the classroom in our situation
mm-hmm.
and looking at all the corners, finding something and seeing what you can notice about it when you really look at it.
Yeah, stuff that we normally just observe but not really conscious, right?
Yeah, you don't really think about what it looks like. You just see it.
Right. And it shifts, right? When we start paying attention to things, everything mm-hmm. is suddenly different. Yeah, so mindful seeing, right? It's a big part. And actually, I don't know if you remember that when I said mindful seeing can really help our nervous system to feel safe.
Yeah, so you know where you, like if you're feeling like freaked out about mm-hmm. like a test or something, just put the test down and just look around. Realize you're safe. You don't have to be freaking out. There's nothing wrong. You're perfectly fine where you are.
Have you ever tried it? Like in a freaking out situation?
Math. Math. Just math in general, yeah.
Math is hard for you.
Yeah, I just stared at the table for a solid 3 minutes and just realized that it was there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And is it because your brain kind of shuts down when you look at a math paper?
Yeah, you're just like, oh, wait, what is that? I don't know what that number means. You're just like, wait, I do know what that number means. Let me just look around. I'm fine. Stop freaking out.
And then you look back and then does something change?
Yeah, you look back and you're like, okay, let me just think about this before I'm just like, wait, I don't know this. Just think. You know it.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because the freaking out happens really fast and automatic, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some people, it's for everybody different, right? For some people, it's math. For other people, it's like reading. I can freak people out too, like, you know, when it's really hard for somebody to read. So when we can slow down again, I love that we just covered that brain model, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like what we do when we tell the nervous system that when we look around, oh, yeah, there's nothing attacking me. I'm in a safe space, right?
Yeah.
I can see colors. I can see shapes. And in that moment, you can start feeling safe. And then you can go back to the task or whatever that it is. And And then you're that upper brain part, right? The smart brain part is back attached to the emotional one.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, it's only your prefrontal cortex. It's only your human brain that can actually even do math. The emotional brain can't do math, right?
Yeah.
The emotional brain that we can always also call the limbic system, right? It can't do math. It's not its job.
Yeah.
But if you're in your emotional brain trying to do math, it's very hard.
Yeah, because it doesn't have the intelligence to do that. It's just emotions. It's instinct.
Correct. It's even instincts. Yeah, they're even a little lower down, right? The instincts in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. So there's a lot to it. And when we start to understand, oh, if I'm totally emotional, I can't do math, then you can take care of yourself, right? And yeah, you know, sometimes I use that when I get really nervous. Let's say I'm even here at the studio, like right before the show or something, and I get nervous. I'm starting to look around and I start to see the familiar things and my whole nervous system starts to calm down. And then it's easier for me to speak. Yeah. Or do anything really, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Okay. How about mindful seeing is actually a good one to do over the air. Shall we do a practice?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do that.
I even brought my little bell.
Ooh, the bell.
The bell. Do you want to ring it?
You can do that.
Okay, I will do it. Okay, I brought the little bell. This is the little bell that I bring to the schools. And I will ring the bell, and then the practice starts, and I will guide you through. So you can do this practice no matter what you're doing. You can even doing driving, because even when you're driving, this practice is safe. Because you actually see better and pay better attention. But you can do it no matter where you are right now. Perhaps you're outside walking and have a little radio with you or listen on the phone. Or perhaps you're inside cleaning up the kitchen, cleaning, whatever it is. Take a moment. And I'm going to show you, teach you a little bit about mindful seeing. Okay, first notice where you are, like where is your body right now? Is it in a car? Is it in the house? What room are you in? And then start looking around and see what you can detect. You can perhaps see different shades of red. You can perhaps discover different shades of blue. And then perhaps you notice some squares. If you're outside, it's harder to notice squares, but there's squares outside as well. Can you see any squares? How about any circles? How many circles can you detect by looking around the place you're in? and really become very curious with your eyes. And then focus in on a little area, perhaps, and see what can you discover in a little area. Is there something, perhaps a light hitting just right or a shadow of something? What are the details? A cobweb? A special way of furniture being created? What can you notice? And then take your eyes and start widening the gaze, right? Notice how you can do that. You can be very narrow with a gaze or being very wide. And the and one more thing, can you see space? We're normally very, very focused on objects. The eye is going to check out objects. Can you actually see the space between the objects? And how does that make you feel? Okay. All right, so that was a short version of our mindful seeing practice, right? What else do you remember from that practice? Did I do it normally a little different?
Yeah, normally we just just sit down on our face like that. But this time we kind of looked around while we did it. We kind of paid attention to what we were doing while we did that.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, mindful seeing can be a really nice thing, nice way to calm down, right? Especially sometimes we can't just close our eyes and breathe for 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious, Lily, have you ever taught anybody else to do mindfulness?
I don't think I've actually taught anyone, no.
Have you practiced with anybody at home before?
Kind of with my mom a little bit. Like, we'll just sit down and just lay there and just hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just be calm, take deep breaths. Oh, yeah, we do a 20-second hug. You just count 20 seconds. Hug, that's how she can really calm your body out.
Yes.
Hugging someone.
Yes, I love the 20 seconds. I don't know if you remember from mindfulness what the 20 seconds are about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've brought it up.
I don't think you've brought it up
okay.
in the classroom yet.
Yes. So when I love that 20-second hug, that's really a wonderful advice because for our nervous system and for our brains, it really takes about 15 to 20 seconds to take something positive in. Now you remember.
Yeah.
Because
our brain, it takes us a shorter amount of time to take in something negative. But it takes us a longer amount of time. Like, if it just happened, like, a nice interaction, you just kind of forget it. Just take 20 seconds or to just sit there and just take it in, and you'll actually trick your brain into feeling much happier.
You really described this wonderful, Lily. It's really like that. You know, when we understand a little more about our nervous system, we can trick it out. Or not just trick it out, but we can make it work for us, right?
Yeah.
And it is true that anything that's difficult in our lives, right, it's so easy to remember. And it only takes a second for us to actually really notice, right?
Yeah.
So if something, or if, you know, if we mess up something, that's going to haunt us, right? And we're going to think about it and we're going to think about it. But if we actually did something really great, we don't think about it that long often.
Yeah.
So, again, if you give somebody a long, long hug, right?
Yeah.
Your nervous system takes that in. And actually the hormones, right, on these, everything changes in your body just to become more happy.
Yeah.
And it's actually one of those things that we can use to, as you said, to when we talk about the nervous system, we wire a more happy nervous system. We literally create a nervous system that's easier happy.
Yeah, because we think about negative things. They just get on our mind, and we just think about them so much more. But, like, if you do, like, win a game in football or something, then you're going to be happy for a minute, yeah, but then you're going to kind of forget it, and But then if you, like if an animal died, then you're going to think about that for, like, weeks.
For a lot, for sure, especially loss is a big one, right? And and that's good to feel, too, right? In mindfulness, we're not saying we shouldn't feel anything.
Yeah.
However, we sometimes, like, kind of soak in that negative stuff for way too long. And then we don't see the positive stuff that's actually there as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much. So Rick Hansen, I don't know if you remember that. Rick Hansen, the neuroscientist, says the brain is like Velcro for negative experiences.
Yeah.
And then, like Teflon for positive ones. Yes.
Yeah.
Again, it just describes, again, that the negative stuff kind of hooks onto us, right? It kind of stays
like a tick.
It's like a tick. Yes. It's like a tick.
Yeah, happy stuff is like a fly where it just goes and then it buzzes by your ear a little bit and then it leaves.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I love it. Yeah, for sure. So that brings me to the practice of gratitude, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say a little bit about, do you remember the gratitude practice?
Yeah. Gratitude is just like being thankful for what you have or what, like, don't think about what you don't have. Think about what you do have and be thankful for it.
And how does that make one feel?
It makes you feel happy that you're, like, you've got what you got and you're thankful for it. You're thankful for, like, maybe your parents or your relatives, maybe a sister or a brother.
Right. It's that's the truth where we can be thankful of so many things in our lives, right?
Yeah.
And we forget.
Yeah.
Or, for instance, the analogy, right, of, like, we only like notice if we break an arm, for instance, that it really sucks that the arm doesn't work, but we're not waking up every morning saying, thank God my fingers, my arms, my legs, my whole body works just great, right?
Yeah.
It's a good analogy too, to like notice, oh yeah, we do focus a lot on the negative and we only notice it when it's not working instead of, oh, it's working.
Yeah.
So yeah. So do you do any gratitude practices?
Well, in the morning, sometimes when you wake up and maybe like, maybe if there's like not a person there, that like maybe you're not waking up and they're not waking you up, then you're like, hey, wait, where'd they go? I didn't really think about that. Where are they? I'm not thinking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't really realize what you have until it's gone, kind of.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's true. Yeah.
It's kind of like what it's like. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a command. Kind of like you don't ask your lungs to breathe, but they still do it.
Isn't that cool? Or the heart to beat. Yeah. All of these things work, and we can actually be grateful for it.
Yeah, and we don't really think about what it's doing. Like, we're not like, oh, I'm so thankful that I'm just breathing or stuff like that. You're just like, we don't really notice that we're, like, breathing or, like, drinking water. Like, what if we didn't have like breath or water, like, well, we'd be thankful for it then.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't really last very long, right? Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and again, a gratitude practice can make us feel really, really good. And it's a healthy thing to do, right?
Yeah.
So what are you grateful for right now?
I'm grateful for my parents. I'm grateful for having, like some people barely have any water these days. Like, global warming's a big thing. And we're lucky that we still have, like, what we have and all these resources and a warm bed to sleep on, really.
That too, right? Yeah. As I say a lot also in the classrooms, it's like I do gratitude practice every morning because I wake up grumpy. I'm like, I don't want you to.
I'm not a morning person.
No, me neither.
I'm just going to say that, and everyone who knows me knows that.
And it's rough sometimes to get out of this warm, cozy bed.
Yeah.
So I really, instead of just be grumpy and upset that I have to get up, I'm just really shifting every morning in a just gentle little gratitude moment of like, what am I looking forward to today? What are things that I can influence? You know, or what is just a simple warm tea that I'm looking forward to, or cuddle with my dogs, or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can make the big difference for sure. And all right. So gratitude is one of the very, very important practices. And it's actually it's a big part of mindfulness, right? It takes attention. It takes awareness to be grateful for things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I'd like to... Oh, we do have a caller, I just see. Ooh. Let's hear what the caller has to say.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is such a spiritual conversation. I hardly know what to say other than to say that we're discovering what's right and what's wrong together.
Yep. Okay.
That's pretty much, and I've been really enjoyed your conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Coming through the airwaves.
Okay.
This changes everything.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's about it for me.
Okay. Well, thanks for the caller, for the calling. Yep. Yeah. Thank you. It, you know, the thing for me, it's like when you say it changes everything, I hear that because for me, it's really, it does change everything. How I look at life, how I look at myself, how I look at pretty much my whole, like everything that's there. Because often we can't change what's there, but how we look at it, we can change, right? Yeah. Yeah, you know, so when you think about mindfulness, Lily.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're mostly using it when you do homework or at school, or is it also helpful? Okay, you also said you're using it when you're upset, right?
Yeah.
To calm you down. Do you play any sports?
I do aerial silks.
Oh, that is, yeah. I just wanted to say, what are your hobbies? Yeah. Have you ever thought that, you know, using it at aerial silks could be a helpful thing?
Yeah, it's a pretty calm, I wouldn't even really call it a sport. It's just fun, but drawing would be hard. That's when I do a lot. That makes me very angry when I mess up. Like, when you mess up, you just gotta...
What? You just gotta have to take a breath.
Yeah, just...
So you get a little competitive when you're drawing?
Oh, and gaming.
And gaming. Okay.
What happens when
you're gaming?
Well, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of game ragers out there.
Right.
When you lose... You just want to explode.
Game ragers, is that what you call it?
Yes.
I've never heard that. I love it.
I don't know. I just said game ragers. It's just like you rage on that game. Like when you, especially Fortnite, there's a lot of people in there that like really mad at Fortnite.
You know, I heard that a lot. And I also teach at the middle schools and stuff.
Yeah.
It can really activate you, right? Your emotional system.
Yeah.
And it's just a game. Yeah, it's true. It's just a game. When we forget, we get so involved. Which actually reminds me of something that adults have to deal with. It's driving a car. There's so many people out there who have serious car aging going on, like road rage, right?
Cars are expensive, too. Gas these days is
That's true. And there's a lot at stake, you know, when we're driving a car.
Yeah.
And you can see a lot of people very upset on the roads. And I'm always like, you know, it's a practice when we're driving. Perhaps somebody does cut us off and we can just say, wishing you a good day. You know, it has a better impact on me than when I get all upset. I can't even, anyway, change the other person, right?
Yeah.
So that would be something for adults to think about instead of, I mean, there's a lot of adult gamers out there too, but it just reminded me because I'm not really a gamer, but I do drive, obviously. So
yeah, I don't do much gaming either, but I've learned a lot of people do.
Right. And so when, okay. And then what would you suggest? Like, take a breath or what other things?
I say just shut the game. Like, it can't hurt you. Just shut off the game and just take a minute off of it. Like, think. Just think.
Just do something else.
Yeah, just like, maybe, like, have a snack. Take a drink of water.
Those are all actually really, really good calming techniques. Eat a snack. Drink some water. All of those things that we can do help our bodies is actually calming down the nervous system. That's very good advice. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe take a bath too. Baths are really calming.
Yeah, that's true. You love those?
Yeah, they can actually like just really calm down your body.
Right.
Because you just feel really nice and calm in the bath.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe just take a shower, just do whatever calms you down, whatever you feel like makes you calm.
Do you sometimes feel like when you get upset, you're almost getting addicted to being upset? Like, it's always like you don't want to let it go?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's like a really good way to describe it. Like, when you're mad or, like, angry, you like... You don't want to stop being mad and angry because you're mad. You're mad. You're angry. You want to be like...
And you think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Right? You're right.
Yeah. I have the right to be angry, right?
Yeah. You're not always right, but...
No, we're never always right. Always depends, right?
Yeah. Like half the time you're probably wrong.
But actually, since we talk about right and wrong and the color brought it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to right and wrong in mindfulness, we're not so worried about right and wrong.
Yeah.
We're more interested and curious. How is it right now? Right?
Yeah.
And because there's always different perspectives to look at things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a very helpful way to deal with things because otherwise we get very stubborn and very stuck. In situation, especially in situations we can't change, right?
Oh, yeah, when you're not the one in charge.
Oh, when you're not the one in charge? Is that a difficult one for you?
Yeah, like when you're not the one in charge and you can't change what's happening because they're in charge. It's all their thing and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I feel like a lot of people like have a difficulty with that.
That can happen, yes. Uh-huh. So letting it go, right?
Yeah.
Yes, and focusing on what we actually can do and not what we can't do. Sometimes we get very stuck in the ideas that we can't, yeah, for sure, what we're not in control of. All right. So we talked about gratitude, right? We talked about the practice of mindful seeing, and we actually did that.
Yeah.
We talked about how to calm down emotions. That's a big one, you know?
Yeah, like emotions are just take control of you.
They can, right? And then the question is, how do we not necessarily let them too much?
Yeah, just control your emotions. Just control them, kind of.
Calm down. Yeah, again, like bringing that pause in, right? When we have that pause is what can help us to make better decisions. When, you know, when folks ask me, like, what is mindfulness or what does it really help you with? It's making decisions.
Yeah.
If I'm not aware, I can't make a decision. Like, I'm just kind of reactive, right? But mindfulness can really help me make that decision. Yeah, okay. Then there is a couple other practices I've been teaching we haven't talked about. Let's talk about the body.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like when you ring the bell, you usually tell us to just focus on your body and what's happening in your body. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? Focus on the spots that you feel or the emotions that you feel too. Just everything about your body. If there's a spot that's like hurt, like you hurt it earlier or something, then just focus on that and say, oh, I'm hurt there. And then focus on what's happening in your body and how you feel in the body.
Yeah, there's a lot to the body, right? Again, when we talk about how to calm down, when we notice the body here, then that feels really good because what researchers actually say is a present mind is a happy mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So which means being present right here and right now, the body is always right here and right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's always here.
But your mind isn't always right there.
That's exactly the thing, right? So we can use the body to bring the mind back, right? Yeah. So that's the whole idea. And actually, let's do another practice over the air here. So whatever you're doing out there, perhaps you're sitting, perhaps you're standing, perhaps you give yourself really a minute to do this practice with us, see how it goes. And this one is called Mindful Body. Oh, yeah. Do you want to give the listener an idea? What is a mindful body?
A mindful body is a peaceful body.
It'd be a peaceful body?
It's a mindful body where your mind is with your body, too. You're just like... focusing on your body.
You're there
right. with your body.
And also what I suggest is that you let the body be quiet and still. And that might look different for, you know, for everybody a little bit, especially mm-hmm. for, you know, you kids. Sometimes yeah. that wiggly body is a wiggly body. Mm-hmm. And we're not just suppressing the wiggly body, but we're just allowing it to become as still as it can in that moment, right?
Yeah.
So that's the whole idea. Okay, so let's do a practice together. I'm inviting you. And the whole idea right now is to notice the position your body is in. Perhaps you're sitting, perhaps you're standing. And notice that you actually can bring your awareness, your mind, into your body and allow it to become quiet and still. And if you are standing, just notice your feet. If you are sitting, notice your feet too. And perhaps also notice where your body is touching the chair. And just kind of relax the body and let it sink into the chair. Letting go a little bit of that tension that we all carry. Perhaps you notice that your jaw is really stiff and tight. Perhaps you notice your face muscles are all tense. Allow it to relax a little bit. And then notice your shoulders. They're often very tense too. Just allow them to soften a little bit. And sink deeper and deeper into the chair. Letting go a little bit of the stress, of the tension, of the holding. Notice how it feels to be in the posture you're in. Notice that you, if you have your eyes closed, notice you can feel your hands without looking at them. You know where your hands are. It's a very interesting phenomenon. We know how our body is in the room. And just give this a minute just to notice, how does that feel when I pay attention to my body? Does it feel good? Is it difficult? Is my mind going somewhere else? All right. All right, so that's a little mini body practice. Was it very different at school, Lily?
No, it's basically the same thing, just sitting in the chair and just...
Noticing
your body.
Are you ever using it?
Yeah, sometimes. Actually, when going to sleep is actually, like, just noticing, like, kind of relaxing your body so you can, like, go to sleep and having a calm body.
Nice. That's a very good point. Like, going to sleep, that's where mindfulness comes in. Very handy. There are a lot of people having a hard time to sleep. So noticing your body on the mattress, kind of sinking into it, right, can be incredibly important and helpful. Yeah. So, very good. Yeah, and also when it comes to laying in the bed, right, sometimes gratitude is a good one because instead of thinking about all the things that didn't go well during the day, you can think about the things that went well. So, that's a good thing too. Laura joined us. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Florina and Lily. It was a pleasure to hear the show today. Yeah, it was very nice to hear you, and thank you very much, Florina, for doing this in the school.
Thank you, Laura,
my name
for joining
Laura.
Us.
Mm-hmm. I'm here as a mom. Limay is going to second grade, and he is really enjoying your mindful classes for sure. And yeah, I know he applies it at home too.
Oh, really? Do you want to share something?
Yeah, I like to see him practicing, especially, you know what I like it is he reminds me. when to calm down too.
Oh, I love that.
And that is a key for what are you doing too. Because I think a big part of this is really modeling for them, because that's what we all need too, right? It's very nice to learn from our kids, especially our generation. I don't know how many of us has the lucky learning process of 5 or 6 years old. You know, I'm 48 now, and I wish I had this at 6 or 5 years old as strategies, and just manages the emotions as Lily was telling us. So,
and the whole idea, I think, from like understanding more the nervous system and how we're set up. I mean, literally when we were young, right?
Exactly.
We didn't even know. The nervous system, the whole neuroscience is pretty new too. So yeah, now we can apply it. And if kids can learn that, it's very helpful.
Yeah, it's a treasure for your life, for sure. As solving problems and facing situations that it's just life just bring to you. I mean, it can be super good or super bad, but you can still be, you know, in control of your emotions and in control of your life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lily, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think parents need to learn mindfulness?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was an absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I absolutely agree, because I realized becoming a parent myself, I really had to step it up with my mindfulness practice right there, because it's hard.
Yeah. And it's a great skill and tool and strategies to have to face the life and every day. And it's true that when you practice it consciously and you are aware of that, your life and the life of the who are around you is a lot better. Even if the circumstances are hard, you can navigate them in a lot better ways if you practice the strategies.
Yeah, and it builds connection, right? Like, for instance, Lily, when you said, you know, the 20-second hug, right?
Yeah.
Or just that awareness of like, hey, mom, take a breath, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Or just when we can start to remind each other. I mean, you know, Julian reminds me all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to
And Julian, you can dive in here if you like to say a couple words here as well. But and then, you know, we remind each other because we're not always on top of the game.
Exactly. It's an old tale that says it takes a village. Right. And we are the village. And
it takes a lot of kids to educate the parents too,
exactly.
Lily. It's not just
Yeah, it's we teach and we learn mutually all the time.
Right.
Yeah. No doubt. Yes.
You're doing some mindfulness stuff at the schools as well, or with the kids?
Yeah, I have the great chance to teach and be part of the team in Head Start, located in Redway. And yeah, together with, a few members of the community, as Gabriela, Susan, Jerry was with us for a long time too, and he's retired now, but he also jumped in sometimes. And we have Haley and Jennifer. It's a big team, and Rose as a teacher. It's a big team of people, and we work together.
What kind of age group?
It goes through Head Start, goes through 3 to 5. And I'm yoga instructor myself, so I really find the opportunity to teach and learn there with the kids, and also introducing some mindfulness with them, because just at that age they are just so much receptive to, and they naturally practice the movements, the poses, the breathing. They love a breathing ball that we have,
yes.
And some props that we have, and they like to copy, you know. So they are just naturally receptive to all this information. So I really believe that as much as we can bring to them and expose them to these strategies, and also the program is very focuses in the whole child and their families. So bringing these strategies also to the kids and in the families helps to build, you know, just sometimes just introducing the vocabulary, putting these mindfulness words in their minds and being exposed to that helps a lot. And you can see how they quickly can use those strategies.
Uh-huh. Like so they're using so it how? Like at, in like during the day or like how do you?
Yeah,
some...
we have a routine. You know, every day we do some. We follow a routine. So twice a week, we also follow the energy of the classroom.
Sure.
You know, because in between the weather and how the kids are, the mood of the kids or the energy every day can change, but we follow this routine and. At least twice a week we do music movements and yoga, you know, so that includes emotional regulation and social emotional interaction. So it really helps them to bring the tools and the strategies to calm down, to know your body in order to manage those emotions too.
Is it helping you as well as a teacher?
Of course, mm-hmm. Of course. It's very, it's mutual, you know. It's a regulated adult can regulate a kid.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, I want to say that again. Mm-hmm. It's kids, especially the younger they are, the mm-hmm. more they regulate on an adult nervous system. But mm-hmm. even adults, we co-regulate all the time.
Exactly.
So if we can be more present, more mindful, we're not just mindful for us, right? We're not just calm and centered for us. We're really helping our environment to do the same.
Yes, no doubt. And it's very important as a teacher to be aware of that. And yeah, and just be honest with yourself too and take a break if you need it. Sometimes we said, oh, I'm so frustrated. I need to take a break. Or I need to take a walk. Or
right, I need
I will
space.
Look at the window for a minute.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
and
those.
That's modeling too. Instead,
right.
Uh-huh, so that's a practice that as a parent we can do at home. Show our kids how we react with to our emotions.
Right.
Because it's okay to be mad, angry, frustrated, sad. But what do you do and how do you react with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, just as Lily said, right? It's like
it
that
makes,
pause
yes.
and that, yeah, you have to, like, do we have a choice how we respond or do we react and just explode?
And, yeah, mm-hmm. And it's important to be aware that that have a big impact in your surrounding and in the people
correct.
That you love or you are with, right?
Right. You know, I mean, that's it's like actually when we talk about mindfulness at schools, right? For me, the biggest part is that the teachers are starting to embody it. When the teachers start to embody it in the classrooms, then the kids can co-regulate and eventually they will teach it to the kids, but not necessarily they have to necessarily teach mindfulness because research already shows that even a teacher who's practicing themselves and embody it themselves, that has a huge impact on the kids they're teaching. And that's for the parents the same, right? It's for any adult, like, for sure. And especially now also in Redway School, these teachers have had it for so many years. I know some teachers are very much practicing it themselves and with the kids too. So, Lily, I'm curious, does Mrs. Garrison sometimes practice this with you guys when I'm not there?
Sometimes, like she'll be like, after the thing, she'll be like, okay, guys, so like she said, we need to just calm down, just take it in. And she'll say, if we've been good, she'll give us points for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? And she also shows you quite a bit of the brain stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely also teachers, you know, who are now starting to, or have been for a while, I shouldn't say starting, but have been for a while, bringing it more and more into the classrooms. And to hear from you as a parent and a teacher, you know, in the community, yeah, it's a real helpful tool, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the program you are doing is amazing and is as well important for our community and as to us as humans, right?
It's a real pleasure, you know, and I'm connected with folks who teach mindfulness around the world, really, and just hearing the stories and see the challenges also in other countries, but also in other states. We're very fortunate here in California, and it's coming more and more. I mean, 10 years when I started, it wasn't a big thing yet. But now it comes more and more. It becomes mainstream, right? People talk about it. I just saw a study this morning, actually, who said it's almost 50%. I think that's a UK study, though. 50% of the school kids have some kind of exposure to mindfulness. That's a lot, you know, when we think about it. And, so Lily, do you think all kids should learn mindfulness, or what's your opinion?
Yeah, I think most people, like all the kids should learn, it would really help, like with a lot of things in your life. And they could grow up to be maybe calmer people. They could maybe handle their emotions and just, yeah, I think all kids should be able to, like, at least be introduced to it to see if they want to do it.
Right. And, you know, as some neuroscientists say, there's this fourth R, right? The three R's of education is writing, arithmetic, and what's the third one? I'm just blanking right now. Writing, arithmetic, and reading, of course. And then the fourth R should be reflection, which is reflection is mindfulness. You stop, you see what's going on, you know, not with the idea you have to change something, but with that reflective piece. And what does that do is really it creates a different nervous system already, right?
Yeah.
From a young age on, as you said, like kids get exposed to it and just soak it up. And even though, you know, now I've been working with junior high students too, of course, everything coming from an adult for a junior high is no, 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 and resistance. At the same time, you know, if they're already exposed to it, there is a conversation to be had and explored, like, why are you wired like you are wired? So it can be very much helpful for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one more thing. You know, I really like that you're using mindful movement with yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big part.
It's fun, and you see the results very quick too, so that's very rewarding. And yeah, I want to add one more thing, what Lily said about the teachers, you know, using that in the school with them. But also, I see a lot how the peers themselves help each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at 3 years old, you can see that. And it's so nice. And just being kind with your peer, you know, with the person is beside you. And if you see that he or she is not well regulated, you can help bring a strategy to them, or just a word, or just be there. You know, sometimes we just need a hug, or someone to listen, or even a break. Somebody
you
can
know,
tell, oh, you should take a break, you know, or breathe, and they help each other to use those strategies. So it's important.
You bring a couple, actually three of the lessons we haven't talked yet, Lily, where you just mentioned is one of them is obviously mindful breathing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a core practice. We do a lot.
Yeah, we kind of do it like in everyone just to like get it in.
Exactly. This is like how we start with any time, right? The mindful breathing, because it's really the fastest regulator for most people. And then the mindful listening, right? Can we just listen? Instead of only talk or only, how is it to really listen to sounds, to other people? That's a huge other practice, right? And then I like what you said, like kindness is actually a huge part of mindfulness, right? And I call this heartfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge part of it. So you remember when we did kind thoughts?
Yeah, and sending some kind thoughts to someone across the room or someone not in the room.
Right. Across the country or across the globe, for sure. Yeah. And is it like with the gratitude practice, kind sending kind thoughts has like the double effect of making us feel good. And I very much believe the other person feels it too, especially if we say it out loud, right?
Yeah.
So cultivating that kindness is a huge part of mindfulness as well.
Yeah, mind is powerful.
Yeah, it is, for sure. Yeah, so are you ever practicing my kind thoughts?
Yeah, like you, yeah, absolutely. Like you can just like do it anytime you want. Just think, like, I hope you're doing good. Like, you don't even have to, like, you could say it out loud, too. But you can do it whatever you want and just send, like, if you're thinking about that person and you're like, oh, I love you or I love that person, then it's just in your brain. You're kind of sending out that energy. So I believe in energy. So I believe it can go over there and send them that energy.
Exactly. And it makes you feel good, which is really cool.
Just a smile could make someone's day.
It's true. Very much. And I just lost my train of thought, I think. That's okay.
One another thing that you can do is actually imagine that you plant seeds. Mm-hmm. Right? Planting seeds is like if you have a little bag of seeds with good thoughts and you are just planting those seeds wherever you like or in the person that you love or you want to send those seeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, if you're kind to others, you're most likely more receiving kindness back.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, like, in Redway, at the schools, do you feel like mindfulness is helping, like, with kind of, let's say, bullying issues or mean moments?
Yeah, I'd say it's helping.
Are you guys, like, helping each other out and making, like, you know, kind of, like, reminding each other? Is that not so much happening?
Not so much, but kind like kind of a medium, kind of sometimes, but some others, some yes, some no.
Okay.
It's kind of in between, you know?
For sure. For sure. The dynamic between kids, right? For sure. That's a big one.
And which is natural, too, because some people is more receptive to those kind of advice or you know, that others, like just in the adult life,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
And we can only take care of our own selves. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah, talking about that, it was in our control and things that are not in our control. We can just control our thoughts and our,
I'm so happy to really hear that you're doing that at Head Start as well and you're bringing some mindful movements into it. Again, mindful movement can be so healing and just that body awareness, right? It's not really taught that much.
Not really. I'm not sure all over, you know, the county or in general. But I'm so happy to bring it here in the classroom. And I know the kids are enjoying. And also they teach some postures or, you know, kind of stretches or things that they natural movements that we had in our brain, you know, that is helpful and healing for us.
Right.
So,
you know, I know colleagues of mine, they teaching again in other schools that I've done educational stuff with. And they're like, yeah, you know, they're also yoga teachers and they're now starting to have whole yoga rooms in certain schools.
Mm. Right? Oh, that's my dream.
Right. Oh. Yeah, I know that. Or
I
even
wish.
Yeah, you wish too,
yeah,
right?
I wish I wish I had one of those in my like house.
Nope.
Like, just to go in there and just do yoga in there alone. That would be nice. That would be nice. Just
every house, every school needs a meditation and yoga room. How about that?
Yeah.
Quiet.
They should make it a law.
It should be a law. There you go. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. And again, it's, you know, it's not that far away. I really know schools who can offer that.
Yeah.
Literally, even if it's just to have a room, you know, and staff can go in there as well, you know, kids and staff. You need a break, go to the yoga or go to the mindfulness room. And it has, you know, a few things there, a few props, a yoga mat, a couple of pillows, something to chill out in. It can be a wellness room, exactly.
Right? Where you find things to calm down, to to love yourself and to bless.
Right.
Bless yourself.
Bless yourself. Yeah, why not?
And, yeah, just to have a good moment or think or read something that you need to read is important to take care of their mental health. We are knowing that more and more every day. So I always think that if we have the knowledge and we have the tools and we have the space, why not to apply and to use it where we are at.
Very much. And you know,
from your place, wherever you work at, you know, even if you drive a truck or are working in the garden, or you are a doctor or a teacher, or whatever is your profession or dedication to, is important to apply the minimum knowledge and tool you have. Would make a difference for sure.
That awareness piece, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I mean, research now shows it so clearly that it's helpful. And one mm-hmm. of the biggest things, especially at schools, is to get the kids ready to learn. Mm-hmm. Lily, right? When you come in from the playground and you're all riled up, or you have something difficult happening in your life and you come to school, you're just not ready to learn.
Yeah, you just want to keep, like, if you came back from recess, you're like, oh, I'm thinking about this thing that I did at recess, and you're not really thinking about what's happening in the classroom at all. So you need to just get yourself in the moment with the classroom, because you can't think about that while you're doing your work.
Correct. Exactly. That shifting, right? Transitional moments. But also, just in general, getting anybody to learn, ready to learn, is actually one of the huge time and energy strains at schools, right? Mm-hmm. So I hear sometimes, and not anymore so much, but I used to hear a lot is, I don't have time for mindfulness in my classroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I'm like, you don't have no time for it. Like, you save time. Just throw in some mindfulness here and there. Because, again, it's like not just for the students, but also for the teachers. That everybody's back in the room, focused in their body, as we said, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the senses are here. We're connected to what's actually happening. And then we can do our best work.
Mm-hmm.
If we're somewhere in our emotional stuff or problems or even fun things from the playground, whatever, where if we're not right here right now, we can't work. Well, we try to, but it's very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I love your math example you brought there, Lily.
Oh, yeah, math. Or just, like, any test in general. Even if it's not a hard one, it just, like, when you see it, some people just, like, freak out and their mind just goes blank.
That's it. Yeah, again, it's that flipping the lid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where
anytime we lose our
capability of having the brain, the whole nervous system engaged, right? We're losing the ability to be our best, period. And really, sometimes it takes a couple breaths, and not even more, to come back to being our best. Yeah, for sure.
And that's the importance that you mentioned, the fourth R,
mm-hmm.
that the reflection. Because even if you know, we all flip our lid.
We all flip our lid. Yeah, don't worry. Everybody does it.
So, and it's really hard in the moment that you are angry or sad, apply these strategies when you are not training on, right? So it's normal to flip the lid, but the reflection on that, I think, is important, because there's a moment also to learn how to train your brain to do it, right? You cannot feel guilty because you flip your lid and then you were not able to apply the breathing calm down, right? So it's important to reflect on what happened when you flipped your lid, or when you were sad, what you said. That reflection will help you to know yourself better, and also maybe push you to start practicing when your lid is not flipped, right? You can start practicing breathing and feeling more in peace in moments that you are okay, just in the morning when you wake up, or whenever you are feeling a little bit angry or sad and see what happened and explore your feelings.
Yes, you start with the little moments. Mm-hmm. It's actually just, it's a mind exercise. You can't compare it to workout for your body because you're not starting to lift 100 pounds if you have never lifted anything before. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to apply mindfulness practices when you're already in your huge tantrum or whatever, when you had a very big moment. It's very hard. But when you practice, as you said, little by little, right? And you do it, and math test or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, I already know how to do this. Then you can actually apply it. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
And then eventually become stronger and stronger. It's training. It's like training a muscle. Your nervous system will wire. And does it already become easier for you, Lily?
Yeah. Yeah, it does become easier when you just apply mindfulness, because mindfulness can help with multiple things. Like
so many things.
So it's like everything that you could like even do it when there's nothing wrong. Like there's nothing there.
That's the whole idea.
Just be calm. Just do it to do it.
Like, for instance, when you do eat a gummy bear, right? There's nothing wrong with eating a gummy bear, but you can be mindful of it and enjoy it even more.
Enjoy the gummy bear instead of just eating the gummy bear. You've got to enjoy the taste of the gummy bear and everything about the gummy bear.
Full senses are
mindful.
It's also be aware as a parent and teachers that when your kid is having those moments, you can't expect your kid just calm down by himself. When he or she is having a tantrum or a sad experience or a frustrating experience, there are certain moments also to bring the mindfulness, and everything is a training. It's not like, when your kid is having a tantrum, you will apply mindfulness and he will be breathing, he or she will be breathing and just calm down.
It's a way of life.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. Be patient too.
Right. Yeah. Wow. We're coming already close to the end of the show. I want to just quick as a couple of reminders, really, what research shows us. So mindfulness, when teachers are practicing it or learning it, what research shows us, it decreases stress and burnout. It increases well-being. Burnout in teachers is a huge problem we're having. It increases the sense of self-efficiency. There's less that sense of time urgency. I'm always not having enough time. Like anytime I walk into a school, there is always like this hectic of there's never enough time for anything. So it's reducing that, right? By creating some space. Then it's improved classroom management and effective use of class time. Again, it's like instead of just trying to calm everybody down while the teacher is yelling around, you actually apply, we all need a mindful moment together, for instance. And then it's also a more inclusive and warmer classroom dynamic if teachers are starting to practice that, which is a huge impact. We can impact so many kids. Then for students, research shows learning readiness. It's that learning readiness that's happening with mindfulness, like really that focus, cognitive development, right? Again, it's a practice done over time. It can help huge with focus, attention. And these times when kids a lot are on their devices, everything's fast, 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 attention is gone for a lot of kids, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are they're just on their device, and they just don't even, like, they're just, like, tuned into that.
Right,
like,
and it goes, anything on a device is really fast, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's very, very fast, and it also helps with well-being in general, also very physically, right? Resilience, so you get less sick, actually. The behavior, it improves behavior, self-regulation, as you said, Lily, right? Emotion, relationships, and social skills.
Oh, yeah, that's big.
Right, it's a big one. It's really important. It's amazing you can learn that already and actually using it. Yeah.
Yeah, we have this helper, Miss Christina. She's great with the friendship stuff.
Like, uh-huh. Okay.
She used to have, like, friendship groups and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. So there's so many people involved in trying to do good things. This is lovely. Lily, last words for our community. Do you have anything to say? So say goodbye.
You should practice mindfulness. Just give it a try if you're not doing it already. It'll help a lot.
Thank you, Lily. You're a rock star. Thank you for coming in so much and spending all this long time with us here at the station. Wonderful. Lara?
Well, thank you very much for doing this program in the school and also in the radio show.
And here we come to an end of Mindful Mud. Truly grateful again to Lily, who was joining me for the whole program, and to Laura, who joined us towards the end. If you have inquiries about the programs I offer in the schools for students, and I also offer lots of trainings for teachers, please contact me via my website, FlurinaNigli.com. That's FlurinaNigli.com. You find the link at the bottom. Thanks for listening to Mindful Mud.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.